Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
The other day I got the news that a local English language radio show in Interlaken, devoted to tourism in the Bernese Oberland, had come to an end after 23 years. The program was called Info Tourist and was started by an Englishman, Mike Parkin, who was later joined by an American woman by the name of Rosemary Smocker. They say that nothing lasts forever, and indeed Mike and Rosemary deserve their retirement after a very long and successful run. But what is particularly sad about this development is that it also represents the end of a long era and tradition in Swiss tourism, and in the Bernese Oberland in particular. For generations, Switzerland had been one of the highlights of the so-called Grand Tour, which took the British gentry through a cultural and historical journey through the continent. Back in the Victorian age, a visit to Switzerland became especially popular. So many British tourists came to Switzerland in those days that local hotels even took English-sounding names like the Bristol, the Derby, and the Victoria. In fact, the luxurious Victoria Jungfrau Hotel in Interlaken was actually built in honor of Queen Victoria in anticipation of a visit she intended to make to the Oberland. Switzerland and the Bernese Oberland in particular have largely the British to thank for the advent and development of tourism and winter sports. For example, it was British climbers who first conquered some of the most famous peaks of the Oberland and Canton Valley. And it was Sir Arthur Lunn who pioneered downhill skiing in the Bernese Oberland in the 1920s, when he made his home in the resort of Mürren. We should also recall the many notable English-speaking writers who passed through this country and used it as the backdrop for classic literature. After the Second World War, Americans also started coming to Switzerland in large numbers, following in the footsteps of their British cousins. Hollywood discovered Switzerland in a big way in the 1960s, and a number of classic movies were made here. At the same time, a number of show business celebrities bought apartments or chalets here. David Niven, Roger Moore, Peter Ustinov, Tina Turner, Charlie and Geraldine Chaplin, Phil Collins, Celine Dion, David Bowie, Audrey Hepburn, and Yoko Ono are but a few. But in recent years, one has heard ever fewer ordinary British or North American voices in Swiss resorts. This is because of a clear and documented decline in Anglo-Saxon tourism to Switzerland. And there's one simple reason for it. Money. When I came to Switzerland in the 1960s, the U.S. dollar was worth 4.70 francs, and the pound sterling would buy you 10. Switzerland was very affordable and a veritable bargain basement for British and North American tourists. But today, sterling is down to 1.50 francs, and the U.S. dollar has fallen to below 1 franc in value. In other words, £1 or $1 will buy you practically nothing here today, not even a cup of coffee. Recently, an American friend was here to organize an international meeting near Zurich. He told me he had never found such high prices nor such unwillingness to make concessions to obtain conference business as in Switzerland. He went on to cite what those of us who live here have known for years, that Switzerland is far too expensive and out of the financial reach of ordinary people. In fact, it's out of the reach of many people who live here. When you're expected to pay $30 for a hamburger, or $25 for a small personal cheese pizza, not to mention the same amount for a couple of glasses of wine, then you've clearly priced yourself out of the popular market. My friend told me the attitude he found was, take it or leave it. And it seems that ever-growing numbers of people are leaving it. Unfortunately, tradition and loyalty seem to have little influence on the tourism industry, and they seem unimpressed by the loss of traditional visitors. The tourism industry goes where the money is, and the money today is in industrial Asia, especially China, Korea, and India. but it's also to be found among the nouveau riche of Eastern Europe, and in particular Russia. The traditional tourists are staying away. Not only the British and Americans, but also the Germans, Belgians, and Dutch. The vital export industry is hurting badly, and will start to panic if the situation worsens. So why, one might rightly ask, is nothing done to bring down the value of the Swiss franc, which, according to economic experts, is grossly overvalued in the first place? A good question, and one that is not eagerly answered, or even heard, for that matter, in official circles. Perhaps the answer is to be found in the fact that one industry seems to be flourishing as a result of the weakening of the dollar, pound sterling, and the euro. That's the banking sector, which is happy to welcome new deposits as investors flee from the weak dollar, pound sterling, and euro. I guess here we could borrow from an old cynical American economic saying that goes, "What's good for the banks is good for Switzerland." Loyalty and tradition just don't cut it anymore, it seems. Yes, it's the sad end of an era, in more ways than one.
From the air rescue service. The rescuer is carrying a radio with which he keeps contact with the helicopter. He is carrying a nylon mesh net about 6 feet long, just enough for the average person. They're unraveling it now, and now it's my turn. I can get down.
Hello, this is Bob Zanotti, and what you just heard was me too. I was being rescued, as it were, by a helicopter team of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard at the Eiger Glacier in the Bernese Alps. Well, fortunately, that was only a training exercise, and you'll hear the whole rescue operation in just a few moments. But first, let's go back to the year 1952. To be exact, the 27th of April of that year, when a handful of Swiss got together and decided to form the Swiss Air Rescue Guard, which, by the way, is no relation to Swissair, the Swiss national airline. Well, those founding fathers decided that it was high time to modernize the techniques used to rescue the hundreds of skiers and climbers who get trapped, injured, and unfortunately even sometimes killed in the mountains. Their approach? Aircraft. They started with 20 parachutists who were trained to jump from aircraft and once on the ground, do what they could to help the victim. From the very beginning, the Guard was a private organization with little more to support them than goodwill. But the contribution of the Guard to saving lives became recognized. Today, the Swiss Air Rescue Guard boasts a fleet of helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft. The newest acquisition is a Learjet. And by the way, we'll take a ride in that Learjet to Italy a little later on. Currently, some 220,000 people, mainly Swiss, belong to the Guard. And that means they pay 20 Swiss francs, that's about $6 a year, for themselves, or 50 francs for their families. This entitles them to be rescued by air from, let's say, a mountain peak, a ski slope, or be brought back home from abroad in case of illness or injury. And the costs, up to 10,000 francs, that's over $3,000, are free of charge. And this covers all but the most complicated of missions. But let's not forget that the Swiss Air Rescue Guard's concept is the use of aircraft. And in this respect, they're pioneers. Because in the beginning, the Guard had to perfect the very difficult techniques used in mountainous air rescue work. Here's Dr. Fritz Bühler, the head of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard and its present-day guiding light.
We had the first rescue helicopter in 1957, and it took us 9 years until we had the right technique to fetch people there where the helicopter can't land. Well, say on steep hills. That was in 1966. We first demonstrated the rescue rope down below the helicopter and the rescue net, the horizontal net. That was in 1966. And 1970, that was the first time we went onto the Eigen North Wall. We made the first tests on the Eigen North Wall if we could do there something. Because the Eigen North Wall rescue missions, they have been terribly expensive. Rescue mission did cost about 26 to 28,000 francs just for one rescue mission. And one way they did it directly was the helicopter. It only cost 1,400 to 1,800 francs.
At the beginning of this program, we said that the Swiss Air Rescue Guard is a unique organization. But those are not our words. They're the words of Fritz Bühler, and he's the man who should know.
I think we are in some way unique. I don't think there is another organization in the world who does so much different jobs as we do.
How do you and the Swiss Air Rescue Guard develop these rescue techniques? Where do you get the ideas?
The most of the techniques are improvised systems. We try them once and it happens and it goes, and then we do it again.
The Swiss Air Rescue Guard did it again, exactly 1,212 times last year. These were missions of all kinds: mountain rescues, repatriations, firefighting with aircraft, and even the transport of kidneys for transplant operations. As you might imagine, the personnel of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard have to be a special kind of people to make it go. And they are. Here's Dr. Bühler.
They must have different qualifications. First of all, must be good pilots. And then they must be ready to go anywhere at any time. They can't choose. It's not a sporty job. It's a job you've got to love it, or you can't stay there.
And now back to the Eiger Glacier in the Bernese Alps. The Swiss Air Rescue Guard was holding a practice session and demonstration for the press and some foreign guests who'd come to see how it's done. Well, I was watching one of my colleagues from Swiss television try out the rescue system using a nylon net to hold the victim from the bottom of the helicopter. And then, well, it was my turn.
This is an amazing sight, this huge glacier, the Eiger Glacier, over which a man suspended by a long cord from a helicopter. And now the helicopter's just over me, and here are the people from the Air Rescue Service. The rescuer is carrying a radio with which he keeps contact with the helicopter. He is carrying a nylon mesh net about 6 feet long, just enough for the average person. They're unraveling it now, and now it's my turn. I can get down. Excuse any extraneous noise there may be as I take my position on the ground here. The tape recorder on my chest and the microphone. I am holding in my hand, just under my mouth. I'm sitting like actually a corpse lying on the ground here. They're tying the net around me. And I just hope that this net is as good as it looks. And he's just ready to come now. The helicopter I can hear coming from my right. And my rescuer. What is your name, by the way? Can I ask you your name?
My name is Hans Houtenschild. I'm coming from Kandersteg. That's a place in the mountains.
Well, I hope that you know your job. I'm sure you do. I saw you rescue one person before, and I hope that it goes as well for me. And now, as you can maybe hear, the helicopter is coming over. It's about 100 feet away, 75 feet away now. Hans is standing with these collected cords, which have gathered up the net with me in it, and he will attach this to the bottom of the helicopter. Now there is going to be competition between my voice and the helicopter. I hope that you can hear me. I am completely under this helicopter now, which is hovering about 10 feet above me. And now the cords with the network is being connected to the bottom of the helicopter. There's a place where Hans will sit, and he will accompany me on our journey. And now I'm being lifted, and I'm up in the air, and away we go. I'm now a couple of feet off the ground, up higher and higher.
And higher. Oh, this is a wonderful ride. This is something that every amusement park needs. And now Hans is at my side.
I'm fine, thank you.
Hans is asking me if I'm all right. I appear to be very excited talking into the microphone. And now there are certainly about 200 feet below me. The Eiger Glacier is lurking down below, ice and snow. We're now taking a long sweep. And here we are arriving down to the ground. There's a whole delegation of the Air Rescue Service down below. The whole trip has taken just a few seconds, maybe a minute or so. And now we're going down, down, down to the ground. I'm a couple of feet off the ground. And I'm on the ground, safe on Mother Earth, terra firma once again, after this trip, this 1 or 2 minute trip from my vantage point high above the Eiger Glacier, brought around to a much lower altitude, and I have been saved by the Swiss Air Rescue Service. And for that, I am entirely grateful.
And believe me, friends, that is a trip that I will never, and I mean never, forget. Well, after the excitement was all over, I went over to shake Hans Houtenschild's hand and thank him for a nice piece of work. Hans, by the way, is a pilot as well as a rescuer, and we talked a bit about his experiences in the Swiss Air Rescue Guard. And I'm sorry to say that not all of them were as much fun as the one he just had.
For example, yesterday night we had to go and fetch a dead man out from at the feet on the cliff. We had to fetch him.
But he was mountain climbing and slipped?
Yes, and slipped down. And they fetched him and put him near to a cemetery.
An unpleasant job, but one which unfortunately is all too familiar to the Swiss Air Rescue Guard. Also there at the Eiger Glacier that day was a conspicuous individual. I say conspicuous because he was wearing the uniform of Britain's Royal Air Force. He was Flight Sergeant Moore of the RAF Rescue Service Scotland. And he was impressed by what he'd seen that day.
Well, I came here literally to learn about the Swiss mountain flying techniques. We have no great mountains in Scotland, but we have some very large hills and rather steep ones. Our mountain rescue techniques until recently have been very, very little, and we are now coming here to learn from the Swiss mountain flyers about the mountain rescue techniques that they use.
Well, what techniques or what ideas have you picked up so far while you've been here?
Well, this net system they've got is very good. It's an easy system to use. It's light, it's cheap, and very efficient.
Flight Sergeant Moore of the RAF Rescue Service, Scotland. As we heard earlier, it takes a lot of skill and dedication to work for the Swiss Air Rescue Guard. But at the same time, knowing how to fly a helicopter and getting around in the mountains is simply not enough. By the sheer nature of the job, the rescuer must be more than mildly acquainted with first aid and the administering of medication. He's the one who's confronted with climbers who've fallen 30 feet from a cliff, or are suffering from frostbite, or a fractured spine, or sometimes even worse. Since you can't always get a doctor to the scene, the rescuer has to do that job. Each year, the personnel of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard must attend refresher courses in medical techniques, and there are no exceptions. How to prepare a stretcher, perform transfusions and injections, and learn the latest in drugs. The instructor of the yearly session I attended as an observer was Dr. Schneider of Bern. I asked him to rate the competence of the lay people he was teaching.
I think in most of our cases, our active members are very high qualified for their job. In our extreme situations on flights, rescue flights from the mountains, for instance, it takes people who are not only professional doctors, but it takes very experienced mountaineers, and that's even primary to their medical knowledge.
Is it possible to profile the most common sorts of cases you have to deal with in the rescue and repatriation missions?
Yeah, I think we have to distinguish between rescue missions, primary rescue from the mountains, and secondary missions, we call them, missions for patients we take from abroad. Staying with the latter ones, the mostly less spectacular ones, because the patients have already been tended in a hospital. Very often there we have automobile accidents abroad, or unexpected disease, infections, or disease which needs operation. Appendicitis is a very common one. And people decide better be treated back home. On our primary missions in the mountains, it's mostly accidents, climbing accidents in summer, freezings, and in winter, of course, all the skiing accidents on extreme mountain missions.
In terms of drugs, in terms of medical techniques, which would normally be in the hands of a doctor, do your lay personnel have any limitations?
Yes, our lay personnel are limited. Just today on our refresher course, we gave them a very specific list of the drugs they are allowed to administer by themselves and by their own judgment. They have, of course, the whole set of medication, and if needs be, they can call back via radio, and maybe under the guidance of a doctor, they can advise even some more drugs. The most frequent drugs our people have to administer are medications against pain, and they have a strict list, even morphine products, which they can use in specific cases. Then, of course, sedative medication is very important, and in air transportation, medications against vomiting.
That's the sound of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard's Lear jet, which is reserved for missions of a special sort, repatriation. Let's say a person insured by the Swiss Air Rescue Guard falls ill in a foreign country, or is involved in an accident and wants to go home for treatment. In this case, the crew of the Lear jet, complete with doctor, sets out to take him back. At the moment, repatriation missions are being flown between Switzerland and most other points in Europe and North Africa. The full-time captain of the Lear jet is a woman, fully licensed as a commercial pilot. She's Mrs. Ursula Hedinger. Well, flying a jet, of course, is a big job in itself. But even she can't escape the need to be medically trained.
I'm not doing any medical work on board while flying, but before we are going in the air, we have to prepare a patient that he is able to get through the flight. And before the flight and after flight, I quite have enough to do with the patient and the doctor together.
And as you're flying the Lear jet, are you aware of the fact that you are carrying a human being on board the plane who needs medical treatment, or is that shut out of your mind and you concentrate only on the flying of the plane itself?
I have to concentrate only to the flight. I'm not able to have any concentration or any mind to the person which are in the back of the plane.
Summer is the time when Mrs. Hedinger and her crew are called out the most, because of course it's vacation time, with thousands of Swiss traveling to other parts of Europe. It was 7:30 on a warm and sunny morning when I arrived at Zurich's Kloten Airport for what would prove to be a full day's repatriation mission with the Lear jet. The destination? Milan, in northern Italy. And this was not a training exercise. On board the aircraft, during final checkout before takeoff, I spoke with the medical officer for the mission, Dr. Philip Reiner. He told me what he knew about the case.
Well, this case is a car crash. And at the moment, I don't know more.
So you have to more or less see the patient, wait to see the patient, and decide how the handling should be carried out.
Exactly. I prefer to go to the hospital and check the patient and look what he's to do before starting transportation, then to get them on the airport.
How many missions of this kind would you say you have during the summer season, the tourist season especially?
I would say about 2 or 3 flights a day.
And Dr. Reiner, beside actually transporting the patient in the Lear jet owned by the Swiss Air Rescue Guard, on the ground, the transport from the hospital to the airport and into the aircraft itself is conducted exclusively by you, I believe. Is that right?
Usually, yes. Doctors in hospitals are usually not used in air transportation, and they very often do not see the problems we have in the aircraft, and it's much better to prepare the patient in the hospital for better condition than to prepare him on the airfield outside.
Does it ever happen, Dr. Reiner, that a patient will appear to be in a fairly stable condition when he leaves the hospital, but perhaps during the flight back to Switzerland something goes wrong, some emergency does happen?
Most of the cases, exactly the contrary. We have them in in sometimes very bad condition in the hospital, and then the condition will be much better after the flight. Is this partly psychological or is it physiological, the fact that he's more relaxed in the aircraft?
Both. These people coming in our aircraft feel more at home. We talk the same languages, and they think they have the atmosphere of being home.
Thank you very much, Doctor. It's exactly 2 minutes after 8 in the morning here at Zurich Airport, and perhaps as you can hear from the noise in the background, the Learjet of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard is now barreling down the runway here at Zurich's Kloten Airport. In a very few seconds, we will actually be in the air and on our way to Milan in northern Italy to bring back to Switzerland a Swiss accident victim, a road accident victim, who is in apparently not particularly very, very good condition. We are now airborne, looking at this in a more pleasant way. The trip to Milan will be a very nice one, a very interesting one, because it takes us over the Alps of Switzerland and Italy, which of course is a very lovely sight indeed. Just 30 minutes exactly since we took off from Kloten Airport in Zurich, from Zurich Airport, and now as I look down, we can see we're already at the outskirts of Milan. The superhighway, the autostrada with its clover leaves and heavy automobile traffic, in just a few moments' time, we'll be setting down at Milan Airport. And down we go. Quicker and quicker, and now any second we'll be feeling the touchdown, the vibration of the landing. And there we have it. This touchdown, very smooth. And that's it. Now to the hospital. I'm speaking now from the hospital at Cremona. How did we get here? Well, not by aircraft, by taxi. Sometimes even the fastest means of transportation is slowed down by the conventional means on the ground. But that's the way it works, and Dr. Reiner has gone in with the local doctor, consulting with him about the case to find out the particulars. The crew of the Learjet of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard has taken all of its equipment in. That includes stretcher, medical instruments, pumping equipment, even equipment for transfusions if necessary. They're fully equipped, even underway. And in just a few moments' time, when the patient can be prepared, they'll bring him down. An ambulance, which the Swiss Air Rescue Guard has chartered, will pull out here in front of the emergency entrance to this hospital in Cremona, which is very large and very nice, by the way, and will take us back to Milan to the airport, where the patient will be placed on the Learjet once again. And 30 minutes later, will touch down in Zurich.
Time passed as Dr. Reiner conducted a thorough examination. Clearance had to be received from the Italian medical authorities to release the patient for flight back to Switzerland. Finally, the patient was brought down, fully prepared for the trip in the ambulance to the airport. I asked him if he would mind saying a few words for the microphone. He didn't mind at all. He was happy. I let him introduce himself.
Adrian.
And you're from Zurich.
Yes.
What happened?
I had an accident with a motor.
You're on a motorcycle?
Yes, motorcycle.
You feel glad that they've arrived?
Yes, of course.
The pilot and co-pilot and myself rode back to Milan Airport, leaving Dr. Reiner to care for his patient. After a while, the ambulance arrived at the airport where Adrian was carefully placed aboard the Learjet. When that was over, we climbed into the aircraft for what we thought would be a quick 30-minute flight back to Zurich. But that was not the way it was going to be. This is what happened.
We're back on board the plane. We're taxiing down to get ready to take off. But not to Zurich. These things can happen. We were supposed to go right back to Zurich.
But it turns out that a young child, a small child, has been taken ill in the town of Verona in Italy. And we're not going to Zurich. We're making a detour to pick up this child. But the work of the crew of this particular plane is not finished yet, because after we do touch down in Zurich and I wave goodbye and shake their hands and get into a car and drive back to Bern, they fuel up and head for Stuttgart in southern Germany. All in a day's work, a typical day's work, and it's a hard day's work, and I've seen with my own eyes of the Swiss Air Rescue Guard.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.